We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Muse, the brain sensing headband, and Meditation Studio, the 5-star app. Head over to choosemuse.com/meditationstudio to explore hundreds of free meditations. It is a great way to start the year. Today's guest is Marisa Handler. Marisa was on Untangle a year ago, and we invited her back because so many of us loved her ideas on creativity and how it can emerge in our lives in so many different ways. She is a writer, singer, songwriter, and she teaches creativity, meditation, and transformation at Stanford University, Spirit Rock Meditation Center, and California Institute of Integral Studies. She's also a facilitator of the work of Byron Katie. Today we talk about what it means to be creative, how life itself is an unfolding of the creative process, and how there's always creative potential in everything that we do. She also discusses how doing our best creative work helps us to find our voice and how our obstacles can be a gift as we uncover their true meaning. She shares how we can stay open to new ways of seeing things, engage creatively with our limits and our edges, and stay very, very curious. You'll also hear some of her thoughts on our shadows, our dreams, and our visions. Marisa's year-long creative coaching program starts January 18th, so get in touch with her if you're working on a creative endeavor and want to bring it to life this year. Find out more at marisahandler.com. Now, on to the show. Marisa, it is such a joy to have you back on Untangle. I'm very excited. Thank you for being here.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
We talked a lot about creativity in our first interview, and I'd like to talk about creativity as well in this interview, but I want to remind people how you came to being the wizard of creativity. What was your inspiration?
My own inspiration, I've always been highly creative. As a child, I wrote stories and plays, and I'd written and been publishing in my 20s, and I'd also been on a spiritual path. And long story short, at age 33, while in India on a Fulbright to write my novel, I had a breakdown. And it had been building for a while. I'd just come out of graduate school, gotten my MFA in fiction, and I completely fell apart. And it had its deeper roots in older stuff that I'd been pushing away and repressing and sublimating into drive. But all of a sudden, I'd gone from being this high-achieving, highly creative person to really a shell of myself, scared to go to the grocery store. And that sparked a whole healing journey. It took a long time, actually. There were about 3 years where I couldn't write, I couldn't sing. I'm also a singer-songwriter, and it was just completely inaccessible. And I had a wonderful mentor. I had a damn good therapist. But none of that got me creating again. I had to really figure that out on my own. And certainly it wasn't something I'd gotten in my own creative education. And really bit by bit, slowly, often through trial and error, I opened that channel up again, to quote Martha Graham, who speaks about opening the channel creatively. So I took what I'd learned, and of course, this was over years, and began to put it together into a system, really, which was, again, very different from what I'd ever been exposed to. It's a form of creating that is based on receiving. It shifts the focus from production to becoming who we truly are, which is very much unique to each of us, rather than comparing or judging. And I started to teach this at Stanford, and I began to use it one-on-one working with my clients and then turned it into a group program. And I'd also simultaneously, since my early 20s, been on a spiritual path, a deep spiritual path, particularly in the Dharma in my 20s, sitting a lot of silent retreats, and then that all expanded into other directions. But essentially what happened, ages 33 to onward, I would say, was the two paths began to converge. That was actually how I came back into my creativity, was to bring together, basically, I would say, creative process and healing and awakening.
So you write that we're all intrinsically creative beings. What do you mean by this? Your story is interesting because you were creative and then you had a blip, that's putting it mildly, and then you came back to being creative. Why do you think we're all intrinsically creative? What would you say to those of us that grew up without singing or writing, or maybe we were playing sports or doing something else? Do you think there's creativity potential in every single person?
Absolutely. I would say a couple of things. That creativity can emerge in very different forms in different people. So for someone, that might look like building an NGO, or the creativity may come through leadership or into their mothering or cooking, but it's there. And I think for those of us who really feel like, wow, it doesn't come out anywhere, I would say it's probably because at some age that was quite young and very impressionable, we shut that down. And what happens, it's for good reason. Creative energy is powerful and it's life force. I see it as life force. And I think we're all intrinsically creative, because when we open to that energy is actually not coming from us. It's coming from something greater. You can call that the mystery or the cosmos or God or the muse, if you will. Spirit, to me, the name is irrelevant, but it's who we are on some fundamental level. And because it is so distinctive to who we are and often so close to the bone, when we're in situations, and usually this happens at a younger age, but not necessarily, where we don't feel safe, this could obviously be psychologically safe. There's a parent or a teacher who is saying, this is how you need to be in order to fit in order to belong, in order to be loved and affirmed or whatever. We will shut that down. And we will shut that down because survival comes first. And again, survival, I'm talking about psychological survival as well. So usually when it feels like there's zero access to it, there's good reason for that. And that reason, I would say, comes down to trauma or to certain stress patterns that are generally quite old.
Yeah. Let's define creativity, because you just said it could be starting an NGO, it could be cooking. So we bring this creative energy into the things that we really enjoy doing. You talk a lot about the creative edge and the unfolding of the creative process. And is there a definition of creativity that is meaningful to you that encompasses this essence?
I love that question. And I'm realizing I haven't necessarily come up with a great definition for myself. So I'm feeling into it right now. And my view of humans really is that we are comprised of two parts. One part is, you might say, the animal, the part of us that is rooted in earth, that is of the earth, literally. And then a part that can access something that is not of this plane, you might say. And this is something that the spiritual geniuses of human history have accessed and have shown us, whether we're talking about the Buddha or Christ or many different figures that in different ways, more contemporary levels, we could talk about Gandhi or Mandela or Mother Teresa, Rumi, Saint Teresa of Avila, all the mystics, Mirabai. And I think it's ineffable, so it's actually hard to put a name to, but I feel like that's where creative energy comes through. And I think the mystics are actually a wonderful model for this. Some of which I just named, Hafez, these beings really who access something very deep, went into a mode of deep reception, receiving, listening, and then it emerged through creative expression, poetry, dance, song. So to come back to your question, I would say creativity is where we open to something that is greater than us, which paradoxically can only come through us in the distinctive way that we let it through. In other words, we're opening to something that is, I would say, universal and beyond the human, yet it only emerges into the world through our particular distinctive way of seeing and being and doing.
That's a great definition. And with that definition in mind, you talk about how life itself is an unfolding creative process and every moment has tremendous creative potential. And you also talk about what it means to be on the creative edge. What are your thoughts around that?
I saw this really on my first meditation retreat, which was in India at a younger age, at 24. I just had this experience of suddenly everything opening up and me being on some level in communion with everything, which was very revelatory and shaped me in some key ways. And some part of me knew this is actually the possibility in every moment. Like on some level, in every moment, the possibility exists to be in unfolding creative dialogue with everything, with the cup of tea in my hand, with the branches of the trees moving outside in the breeze. And it takes being very open. And I don't know that we need or want to always be that open. Martin Buber talked about I and thou. And to me, again, this is not separate from the spiritual, because there is a sense of profound connection where there's just an ongoing dialogue happening on many levels. I believe that the possibilities here are actually infinite, and also that we don't know where it's going. For example, I could say to you, well, I think tomorrow I'll be doing X and Y, or I think in 5 years I'll be doing A and B. But we ourselves are the creative material of collective unfolding consciousness. So what I find very exciting about this is that we really actually don't know where the journey is taking us. So if I get that open, and this isn't much of my day, I need to navigate getting through things to get from this activity to that activity, or it's not always appropriate necessarily to be that open. But when I am, I make myself available to that force, and I don't actually know what's going to come through. Now, anybody listening to this who's had an experience of creating something, like writing a poem or a song or painting a painting, I think will be able to identify with what I'm talking about, because once we're deep in creative process, you can also call it flow, the flow state, there is the sense of something moving through us and we don't know what's happening. And I'm remembering in the process of writing my first book, which was memoir, which turned out to be an unexpectedly creative process. I thought I knew what I was going to write. And then as I got immersed in it, went in other directions. So I think we've all had a taste of this experience. And what I'm talking about is that it's larger. It's larger than just when we sit down at the page or at the canvas.
It sounds like this beautiful stew of tangible and spiritual that leads us to our voice. And so our best creative work comes to us through being who we truly are. And I guess my question is, if we haven't felt this, and much of what you're talking about might feel somewhat esoteric, how do we find our voice? And we'll get into your principles. And I know you suggest that we stay radically open. I'm always looking for shortcuts, and maybe there isn't one, but is there?
It could be as simple as free writing. This is an exercise I often use when I teach. Sitting down at a piece of paper and having something, where there's some energy to it. It could be an emotion, like I'm really pissed off at my partner, or it could be an image, like there's something about that leaf moving in the breeze that really touched me and I don't know what it is. It could just be a complaint. It could be something quite simple and even small, or even just finding a prompt online, a creative writing prompt, and then just letting yourself go, letting the pen move across the page without stopping. Free writing is a great way to break through the judgmental voices that come up for all of us when we open. This is very common. And just seeing what comes and letting yourself be surprised. I think that that can take 5 minutes, 10 minutes. This can be a wonderful way just to get a taste of this. That would be, I think, the quickest, quote unquote, shortcut. But I think ultimately it comes down to letting ourselves be who we truly are. And we know that deep down. We might have buried it or it might have been buried, but we actually know that. So it's really a matter of coming into our own felt, authentic sense of that.
Well, and you talk about obstacles being a way for us in some ways to find our voice and that they are really important on our path. We'll talk about that more a little bit later. But what role does self-doubt play in the creative process? How do we turn around? Because part of it is some of us don't feel like we're that creative. Maybe it's because we've never created something that anybody said, hey, that's really good. Or it's just our own inner critic. How do we work with our self-doubt?
So one of the best tools I have and have come across is the work of Byron Katie. And I'm a facilitator of that work. I went ahead and got certified because I love it so much, where it's really just taking a limiting belief. It could be, I'm not creative. It could be, I'm not good at this thing I want to be good at. And then just actually bringing it to paper and using inquiry to investigate and see, find out what's true for ourselves. The other thing I would say is Joseph Campbell said, follow your bliss. And then the contemporary scholar and mystic, Andrew Harvey, said, follow your heartbreak. And I think those are actually really good inroads. When we find what we care about, whether it's something we love or something that causes us pain, if we open to that experience, there's generally energy there. Well, there's always energy there, I would say. And where there's energy, we can trust. There's something here that wants to unfold. And that can be a good inroad as well.
I like that there's something here that wants to unfold, because sometimes Oprah talks about the whispers and people have different language for those messages or feelings that come through us that we sometimes say, not now, not now. So that is really interesting. I'm wondering, as we're writing, and whether it's memoir or novel, you talk about the role of paradox in writing. And I often feel, as a nonfiction writer or someone who loves writing nonfiction, I'm trying to uncover an absolute. This is the way it is. And knowing that ambiguity is far greater. But what is the role of paradox in writing?
To me, paradox, the deeper we get into deep truth, the more we come into paradox. So it's, for example, we all have access to this energy, yet it can only come through us the way it distinctly comes through us. Nobody else can give your genius to the world. Only Patricia can do that. And another paradox is that only we can do it, and we can't do it alone. That's the other thing. I learned this the hard way. We can't do the journey alone. It doesn't work that way. We're not designed for that. So to me, paradox on some level, at least for me in my own journey, because it baffles the mind, it's almost like a koan, like a Zen koan. Paradox helps me stay humble. So even as, for example, I'm writing or I'm singing, there's some part of me, hopefully, that's open to what I don't know that might come through, that's staying humble enough to stay somewhat open. Because of course, we're going to have plans, like I want to finish this chapter by this date, or this should look like that. And paradox to me is one way of staying in the unknown and holding that as much as I'm moving, following my own deep impulse here, I don't actually know where it's going to go. To me, that is the creative process. When I'm teaching and someone says, oh my gosh, I thought I was writing about this, but actually it turned out to be about that. I'm delighted by that, because that person was letting that energy move through them. And it knows more than we do. Energy knows more than we do. I don't know if you want to say smarter than us, but there's something when there's like following your bliss, following your heartbreak, if there's energy there and we get curious, that's another thing that's just so key, is just to, if we can, to be curious. Now, self-judgment is a good way to kill curiosity. So we want to at least say, okay, I know you're here. Can you just hang out on the side for a moment while I explore, while I get curious about what's here and let it unfold? Surprise me.
Befriend your inner critic. Have them take a back seat for a moment while you engage your curiosity and your creativity.
Totally. And it's what works for you. We can befriend it. We can just set a boundary. We can say, you go outside, but it's whatever works.
Yeah, whatever language someone has.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, take comfort in Born Shoes. Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping, available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. We talk about these often on Untangle. When we keep things bottled up inside, it can start to impact our health mentally, emotionally, and physically. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, whatever it is. If this sounds like you, and it's a bit of all of us, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule and needs. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now over to Untangle.
Degraded. So I want to talk about the 7 principles that will help us as artists when we have a canvas in front of us, or when you talk about practices, obstacles. I want to go through some of these principles and have you just talk about them. And you've touched a little bit, but I want to get into a little bit more detail. So the first one is, like an artist facing the blank canvas, we stay radically open, even to questioning our own ways of seeing.
Yeah, so it speaks for itself. What I will say is this takes real courage, actually, because questioning our own ways of seeing might mean unpinning certain structures that have been with us for decades. Questioning the thought, I'm not creative. If we believe that our whole lives, that could shift our entire world. So that's what I mean by radical openness is it actually true that I'm not good at this? Or is it just that a teacher told me that when I was 6 years old? Or is it actually true that, for example, okay, I use me as guinea pig here. I've always said I'm a terrible cook. I believe it, I have to say. My creativity doesn't enter the kitchen for whatever reason. That might be a good one for me to investigate. And it would require some real openness. My friends might disagree. You just stick with that. We'll do the cooking.
Well, there is something to that. We know what we're good at. I'm the same way with cooking. And I keep thinking, I want to take some more cooking classes. I'm just going to try this recipe. And then again, I look for shortcuts. I get bored while I'm doing it. I don't really think cooking is my creative jam. So do we keep exploring?
No, we don't. We follow the energy, right? Yeah, your creative jam is writing. It's hosting a podcast. We do want to actually follow our gifts.
And there are some cases where my sister-in-law worked in business her entire career. I never saw anything that she painted or wrote. And after she retired, she started creating this incredible work. I'm like, you're a writer? You're a artist? I had no idea. So I think sometimes people touch back into their earlier gifts after they finish doing something else for whatever reason.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a point where either it's that we finally give ourselves permission or maybe we finally have the space. I'm just so glad to hear that she did that and she accessed.
Yeah. The second principle you talk about is using our own practices intuitively. What does that mean?
I know for myself, at least on the spiritual path, being in the Dharma, there was the sense of, okay, everything needs to fit a certain worldview that I've gotten in this spiritual path that has benefited me hugely. And when I came into an experience of breakdown, which I also call and teach about as the dark night of the soul, it wasn't enough. I actually needed to find some practices that were body-based. I needed to do nervous system work. I needed to find other things. And so what happened in my own experience is that my range of practice really opened up. And so I came into somatic experiencing and the work of Byron Katie and authentic movement. And there were other practices that came in that really served me. And at a certain point, I realized, gosh, I have quite a toolkit here. If I'm feeling stuck in a given moment, whether creatively or whether in life, what's the right tool? And it was a little bit clunky, like, oh, maybe I should do nervous, maybe I should ground in this moment, or maybe I should inquire into the belief. But over time, as we get better versed, as we master these practices, we can move intuitively through them. And creativity is a great model for this. As artists, we do need to learn some craft to begin with. If we want to be a writer, we need to take some writing classes. We need to get some feedback from people. We do need to actually get some craft under our belt. But then at a certain level, once we've, quote unquote, learned the rules, we figure out how to skillfully break them. And that's where mastery comes into play, whether you want to call it 10,000 hours or whatever.
I really like the way you answered that. And maybe the toolkit looks a little bit differently depending on our craft and our own personalities. The next principle is shifting the emphasis from doing to being.
Yeah. So a lot of the time, people who come to me, people who join my group program or come as clients, they're feeling really stuck because they haven't produced. I have this novel that's been in me for a decade. I know I'm meant to be performing my music. I just couldn't seem to get there or whatever. So we shift the focus from production to actually becoming who we really are. What does that mean? It means somewhere in there, there's something organic to us that is very distinctive. You might call it essence. And instead of trying to sit us down at the page and punish ourselves until we get a certain amount of words on the paper, we get curious about who we really are and what's blocking that. We use the best tool. This is where, again, having, like, I will work with people using different tools to open those places up gently. And then ultimately transform them so that they trust us enough not to get in our way, not to stop us. And then things can move. So ultimately, it's about becoming who we truly are. And when we are in that, and of course, this is a process, it's not black and white, but when we're in that place or enough in that place, creative energy flows organically. It just moves. That's what it does because we're not blocking it anymore. And so we do produce, we definitely produce, and we may produce much more and much greater material than we even knew we were capable of. That's what's exciting. So what got us here, because a lot of the people that come to me, they're people who've done a fair amount of personal development already, whether that's therapy or meditation. They've already achieved some wonderful things in the world. But what got us here isn't going to get us there. Whether the patterns of producing, of pushing, of scheduling, of creativity is a different animal. We need a different paradigm.
That makes so much sense. The next two principles are really, I think, connected. You can shed some more light on that. The fourth one is we engage creatively with our limits or our edges, which you talked a little bit about before. And then obstacles don't block our path. They become our path. So how do those two interplay with one another?
They definitely are connected. We get to engage creatively. We get to bring that creative energy to the places where we feel blocked or hindered. And that means bringing a certain openness. And again, creativity has everything to do with curiosity, which implies openness. So, this is an interesting place, this edge. What does it feel like in the body? What is it trying to tell me? What does it want? We actually engage with these creatively, get curious, and they open themselves up to us. And once they trust us, they begin to lose their power. And obstacles are the path. I believe the things that, and for each of us, we have our top three hits or whatever it is. It might be doubt. It might be comparing mind. Oh my God, my Facebook frenemy is doing so. What are the chances? I should just give up. It might be self-judgment, inner critic. I don't believe these are just here to torment us. I believe these have their place. And when we can open to them and use good tools to alchemize them, really, to transform them, they actually open us much deeper and wider than we would have without. This is what I saw in my own lengthy experience of the dark night of the soul was when I did, and again, it was a process, when I did emerge, I was a much deeper, bigger person than I would have been without that experience. And I believe the obstacles, not only do they open us wider and deeper, but ultimately they are also our training in how to fully embody creative energy, because it's powerful energy. We have to be strong enough. We have to be strong enough to hold it and wise enough to know how to stay out of the way.
Parker Palmer talks about his three deep bouts with depression and how they ended up, and certainly not during them, being these great gifts, inviting him into inquiry about his own life and something none of us could understand and be in with him. We understand our own experience, but it's very hard to communicate that experience when you're in depression or dark night of the soul. And I feel like it is true that most times when you're in whatever you want to call that darker space, it's hard to see the light at the end. But if you can be curious and invite some inquiry there, it's an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah. And I think when it's really rough, and I've had more than one experience of breakdown, and it's interesting because even though I'd had it before, it doesn't make it less hard. But I think there are moments where it's really just about survival. There are moments where it was so hard that it was just like, I just need to, oh, look, I got through another hour. But it's once there's a certain capacity and we've gotten through this and we can begin to make meaning, to thread narratives together, to see the gifts because they're there.
You have to be a bit forensic. You're excavating some of the depth that's there. Maybe it is a gift to be able to access those deeper pools within you. Certainly, if you're a spiritual person, you feel that.
Yeah. When I was really in the thick of it, it certainly didn't feel like a gift. And there's a teacher, Jeannie Zandi, who I think actually she was quoting a friend of hers saying, if you're having a nice spiritual experience, it's not a dark night of the soul. It just isn't. We can access that. But I'm very grateful because in my experiences, I had, again, an excellent mentor and teachers who could hold that bigger framework when I was incapable of holding it myself.
The last two principles, and you have touched on these, but one is we stay attuned to our own knowing, which is really what you were saying when we listen to ourselves deeply. And then we stay curious, allowing for any change that might emerge.
Yeah. So attuning to our deep knowing, it's a very individual process and it's coming into the heart and the body and the nervous system, all of these ways that are deeper than the thinking mind to sense into what you might call it intuition or what am I feeling at this moment? What's working for me? What resonates for me? And then, yeah, staying open to what unfolds, which again might be deeper and greater than we'd even imagined.
Yeah. What do you say about fear? For people that are facing a blank canvas, or what is that reason that we don't venture forth into something that we don't know?
Yeah, gosh, fear. So in my experiences of breakdown, it's like the terror. I've been in terror. It's been terror that has characterized it. So I've had a lot of experience with fear, I would say, and it's been a big one for me. I think it's probably the hardest, honestly, of all the things I've navigated. And Jack Kornfield says, I'm paraphrasing here, but he says, fear says, you're about to grow. That's fear's message. And I think fear is what we encounter when we hit the edges of the unknown. You might call it a mindfulness bell or perhaps a fire alert or clanging away in there. And just in terms of caring for our nervous systems, we want to approach it with some wisdom. So if we're going into overwhelm or terror, then it's a good time to go out and regulate by finding something pleasurable, calling a friend, watching a comedy, whatever it might be that brings us back into balance. But when it's, if we're talking about a scale from 0 to 10, when it's like maybe up to 7 or something and it's workable, as much as we can to stay curious and know that this is actually a sign. Usually for me, when fear comes up strongly, it's a sign that I'm expanding, actually. It might not feel like that.
Right. It's the same idea of sitting with your uncomfortable feelings. We have that in the creative process. We have that in our relationships. We have that in our work. When we feel discomfort, we think something's wrong, not that we're bubbling into something that could be good. I want to talk a little bit about your Live Your Creative Genius year-long program. And I know that it's starting in January. Who is a program like this designed for? So would you be willing to go through the evolution of this program?
Gladly. It's a 9-month program and it's designed to be like a womb for our creative selves. And I started it because I'd been, again, working one-on-one with people and teaching this material and seeing the results. And I knew from my experiences in the classroom and in my own practices, the power of a group, of community. And I wanted to have something where there is that inbuilt support and a circle, really, where it's not just me holding an individual, but we're holding it together. And there's something magical and mysterious about community where it somehow becomes something much greater than the sum of its parts. And it's a small group program. I cap the cohort at 10 people so that those bonds can get formed. And I designed it to usher us through what feels like a radically different paradigm for doing creative work. And so we begin, the first module is really about receiving. So letting go of a certain mindset around production and instead opening to receiving. And there's a lot of emphasis on the nervous system in this module. There needs to be a certain degree of safety in the body and the nervous system in order to open to receiving, in order to open enough to let that energy move through. For folks listening who feel very shut down, that might be part of it. It's actually doing some work specifically with the nervous system. So the first module is coming into a different way of accessing that energy, which is about receiving rather than pushing. The second module is transforming obstacles to allies. So we really use the best tools that I have come across, put together in the best way that I know how to do, to work directly with our, you might call them demons, but really work directly with those places inside us that have been in the shadows, and that for very good reason, we haven't wanted to go there, to gently open them up and skillfully transform them. Or actually, I would say when we bring the right tools, when we bring the right kind of awareness, it just happens. Again, they begin. Byron Katie says this, I didn't let my thoughts go. I did the work and they let me go. Once they begin to trust us, these places, and to learn, particularly we find in the first module, that it's actually safe to start to expand. We're not going to necessarily die or be hurt if we begin to expand into our next level of being. They begin to release their hold on us. So the second module is really about going deep into these shadow places and doing that work to transform them. And then we go into gestation. Rilke said, I love this quote so much. He said, everything is gestation and then birthing. Everything. Or depending on the translation, everything is gestation and then being born. So it's really about we're in process now. Things are gestating. They're moving at this point. What is it that's moving? There's a fair amount of sharing in the group that happens there to draw on the collective wisdom and also just getting really curious about both what's moving internally in us individually and also what's moving in our work, what's moving in our creative work, what's shifting and changing and what wants to take shape. The fourth module is about that taking shape and coming much further into it. So actually shaping that work, having it come through, giving it form in a way that might feel quite new given the work we've already done. And the fifth module is birth and emergence. It's coming out into the world as who we are now, which is, and I've been delighted to see this, and the participants really speak to it themselves better than I can on the program page, but which is changed. So who am I now and how do I actually bring that self into the world? So how do I bring my unique medicine into the world and get comfortable being who I am, who I've always been? In a sense, it's a program where we are becoming who we have always been. We're just removing what's gotten in the way So we deal a lot with visibility issues, with rejection, because rejection is an inevitable part of any creative path, whether you're an entrepreneur, there are entrepreneurs that come to me, whether you're a painter, whatever it is, whether you're a writer, your work is going to get rejected in the process of getting it out into the world. So we work head on with things like that, with visibility issues, and collectively coming into a place where we're actually sharing what we've been growing and doing it and seeing it received in the same spirit that it was created.
Would you say it would be helpful for people who haven't started a creative process or are newbies? Or you had said earlier, a lot of the people that go through this program have creative projects. They've felt stuck. They haven't been able to work in community or in a group setting. Is this for people that have a project and then this is the next step?
Not necessarily. There's been a range in participants, which is actually made for a very rich group experience. Like I'm thinking about the group that just ended and we had one woman who'd already published a novel and she's fairly young and had a couple of films that were in festivals. And we had someone who was just beginning to birth a project that was in her mind. And then we had a couple of people who knew that they were always capable of it somewhere inside them, but it just wasn't happening. So it's anywhere from getting the book out and signing with a house for six figures, which these are things that have happened with my clients, to actually just coming into a joyful, productive, creative process. Because at its deepest level, of course, it's wonderful to have success. It's wonderful to have things out there. It's nice to get that affirmation. But we have to do this work because we love it. And that's the deepest reward for all of us who, and we know this.
Yeah, I like that you said that. We have to do it because we love it. I have one more question for you, but before I go to that question that I ask all of our guests, is there anything that we have missed that you'd like to share with us about creativity, creative process, being stuck, emerging as a creative voice?
I think just that wherever you are right now, you who are listening, with both your gifts and your problems, as cliche as this sounds, I know it sounds cliche, it's where you need to be. And it is the threshold for where you're going next. And if there's something that's drawn you to this conversation, then I think you can trust that where you are right now is the threshold for your next level of creative unfolding. And you have what it takes to get there. It doesn't mean you don't need help or tools or guides or whatever, but it's in there. And if there's a sense in you that there's something that's wanting to unfold, trust that energy.
I'm a big proponent of asking for help when you need it. We don't know everything, do we?
I learned this the hard way.
All right. So I want to know, what are three pieces of advice that you would give your younger self?
Great question. Stop pushing so hard. Here's the irony. Would I have even been capable of listening or doing these at the time?
That is the question.
I mean, we have to get there. But I would say stop pushing yourself so hard, because I pushed myself a lot. Be kinder to yourself and let you be who you are, Marisa, I would say to myself. Stop trying to be like so-and-so over there. Let yourself be who you are. Be curious, and patience is the other thing. Trust that things will unfold in their own time. That's more than three, but...
That's okay.
Trust that things will unfold in their own time. Patience here.
Trust is a good one. Trust that things will unfold as they should.
I know you think you're in control, but you're not. And that's a good thing.
Right. Marisa, thank you so much for being on Untangle again. I'm so grateful for your time and your wisdom as always.
Thank you, Patricia. Thank you so much. And we start January 18th. So if you're interested, come check out the program. And thank you for these fantastic questions, which got me thinking in all kinds of new ways. It's a joy to be with you.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us today. For more on Marisa and all of her programs, head over to marisahandler.com. And check out Muse and Meditation Studio at choosemuse.com. As always, we're so grateful for your reviews. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And we also appreciate you supporting our advertisers, since they're the ones that help us keep the lights on. Any comments, suggestions, or questions, reach out to untangle at choosemuse.com. We are wishing you a very happy new year, and we will see you next time.